This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I'm speaking with Jessica Pierce and Mark Beckoff. Their new book is A Dog's World, Imagining the Lives of Dogs in a World Without Humans. Without humans. That's important here. There's going to be a transition, and then soon there will be dogs around the planet without humans feeding them or bothering them or abusing them or expecting them to look a certain way. They'll have longer snouts, likely. They'll run, likely. They'll be of medium weight unless there's a necessity for heavyweights. They'll move in packs. But reproduction. Jessica, I come to you because one of the striking details about dogs today is the paternal member, the parent father, is not encouraged to stick around or doesn't stick around. And you and Mark are speculating, imagining that there would likely be a change when dogs are alone. So it wouldn't just be the maternal, it'd be the paternal as well. Did I read that correctly, Jessica?
You did. The way dogs, particularly pet dogs or dogs who are, you know, highly controlled by humans, you know, we hijack the reproductive process in various ways. And one of the ways in which we do that is taking puppies away at the what we consider the perfect age for puppy acquisition, you know, 8 weeks or so. So, you know, there you'll see people say, well, dogs don't have father, you know, parental behaviors, you know, because we don't see male dogs engaging in parenting of puppies. But it's not because they can't or won't. It's because we don't give them the opportunity to do that. And it's, you know, in studies, there aren't very many, but a few studies of free-ranging dog parenting behaviors, males do sometimes play a role. So do what are called the alloparents, so aunts and uncles and older siblings will all probably have a role in the raising of puppies because, you know, it takes a village.
Mark, it does take a village. How are the puppies to be protected without humans? And they do this very well in the wild, but of course they would have probably a high mortality rate. The understanding then is they would be seeking out safe places. Is this pack activity, Mark, that there would be specialists to find and to protect the puppies?
Well, you know, I think what Jessica said is, you know, right on the mark, you know, and what I was saying before, they'll form packs, and part of the function of parents and these helpers called alloparents would be to protect the young. They'll also have to find places that are safe to either make dens or use holes in the ground or in logs that already exist. And they'll have to find places that are safe and away from, you know, potential or, well, at that time, say actual competitors. And I don't think they'll have any problem doing that at all. But of course, you know, before that, they're going to have to pair up, flirt with one another, and then reproduce. But I actually don't think in the future that will be any kind of problem at all for the dogs.
One reproductive cycle, not two, Mark. Why is that?
Well, people don't really know, but it could be because when you're on your own and it's hard to get food or find a place, you know, that's safe to raise your children, you don't want to do it twice a year. You only want to have to do it once a year because there's high mortality in a lot of animals. And so you want to make sure that you maximize the survival of as many young as you can. So I think that one could argue that the one cycle in wolves and coyotes and wild canids is really ecologically driven as well, because you don't want to lose animals.
Jessica, we come to the social skills. The social skills right now are the dogs have learned with their big brown eyes to meet our eyes. That's totally unnecessary. We're not here. So how is it that the dogs will use the social skills? We can witness the wagging tail, the lowered head. You talk about conflict resolution. You talk about communication. You talk about a pack activity. In other words, we don't need a pack of alpha dogs. So will they change without us, or do they have those skills now and we're not recognizing them?
The answer is both. And for me and Mark both, this was one of the most interesting parts of the thought experiment is how, because, you know, we always, when we think about dog domestication, often what pops into mind is the aesthetic features of dogs, like the short snout. But dog behavior has been under selective pressures. And, you know, dogs have been bred, as it were, to be hypersocial with humans and to do things like, you know, follow a pointing gesture or follow our gaze. Whether or not other animals can do this, I think, is still an open question. But there are our behaviors, and you're talking, you mentioned the solicitation behavior, begging behavior, this meeting our eyes with their big brown eyes that tell us that they're starving to death, even though they just had dinner. And it's really a big question whether those behaviors are going to be useful for them in the future in perhaps, you know, soliciting attention from each other, or whether those behaviors will be neutral and just either remain or disappear.
Mark, I come to the chapter that I liked the most was speculating about how dogs learn and how they're flexible and how they have, as an ethologist, cognitive ethology. What do we know about this, Mark? What research tells us that they're good learners and not so good learners?
Excuse me. As a biologist, I look at learning as being a form of adaptation. They can learn. They can do a lot. I mean, a lot of lab studies that are done looking at how bright or how intelligent dogs are don't really tap into a lot of their potential because they're being faced with very defined problems in a very controlled setting. So having studied coyotes for thousands of hours in the field, they're really bright. They're really adaptable. They can live in all these different communities and do things that people are shocked to learn that they can do. I think dogs on their own have that potential that they will be able to adapt to a lot of different social and non-social situations. So they'll learn animals with whom they can form bonds. They'll learn who they should avoid. They'll learn to hunt different animals in different ecological niches. And I think they'll be just fine there. You know, a lot of people think we've selected out some of their adaptability. And I think down the line, they'll tap into what they have and they'll also learn, because I hate to say it because my biological colleagues sometimes say, what do you mean? But dogs are smart. They're adaptable.
Jessica, I come to the part of pack behavior that seems the most challenging, although it makes sense that dogs are either right now in transition to world without us. Will learn conflict avoidance or they have it within them already, Jessica?
I think they have it within them already. And one of the tragedies of modern dog keeping is that we don't let them put that skill to use very well. I mean, if you go spend some time in a dog park, you will, more than anything else, probably witness humans interfering in the behavior of dogs and, you know, saying, oh my gosh, the dogs are getting in a fight, when in fact the dogs are just working things out. So we're not necessarily good at reading a true problem from just a conflict that is going to get resolved successfully. And dogs are very good at conflict resolution. And I think it's a skill, you know, as Mark suggested, they haven't forgotten how to do this. We may have put them in a position where they're not using this skill to great benefit, but they have the capacity to resolve conflicts, probably much better than humans do.
Oh, much better than I do. I many times when walking and we come up against a conflict between the two dogs on either sides of the street, I completely avoid it. I get out of there as fast as possible, and I don't give my companion dog a choice. Mark, we come to general adaptation syndrome. The three parts, this is for coping: alarm, resistance, exhaustion. Are those already in our dogs, or do they have to relearn that having been homed? I'm imagining we disappeared and the dogs whom I loved have to take care of themselves immediately. Do they have to relearn that, or have they got it within them, Mark?
No, I don't think they have to relearn it. I think they have it within them. These general adaptation syndromes are pretty rampant through a lot of different animals, not only mammals, of course. So once again, I mean, my view is that there's a lot that's latent in dogs that we haven't allowed them to express because we don't want them to be dogs. We don't want them to be, say, the mammals who they are, the carnivores who they are, the canids who they are. So I don't think that that will be a problem at all. I mean, and once again, you know, we're talking down the line when we're not here, so generations down, I don't think that'll be a problem at all. I honestly think that the dogs who survive they'll either have to learn and be able to adapt to friendly and non-friendly stressful situations, or they won't be there. But if they've made it that far, I just don't think there'll be a problem at all.
The lifespan, Mark, I noted this, that feral dogs, I believe my memory is 5 years, whereas we keep our home dogs up to 13 to 15 years. Will that settle back down towards the feral five, or will there be a compromise when they're not living with our eccentricities, you know, our cities, our roads, our cars?
Yeah. I think that I wouldn't be surprised to see down the line if it goes around, you know, 8 years. You know, people really, they estimate, you know, maybe the life of your average wild wolf is 8 years, or coyote is 8 years. I think whatever it is, they will then sort of converge on that that length of life, if you will, because, you know, it's going to be hard on them too, in the sense of just a lot more exercise. They're going to have to get food, defend it, and do all the things that their wild relatives do. So yeah, I don't think you'll see a lot of 13-year-old post-human dogs. But, you know, sometimes you'll see wolves who make it to 12 years. And we had a coyote who we knew was 12 years of age, a wild animal.
The book is A Dog's World, Jessica Pierce and Mark Beckhoff, Imagining the Lives of Dogs in a Future in a World Without Humans. And when we come back, we're going to do exactly that. Future Dog, coming up. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.